Thanks for the opportunity to talk on a couple topics that are really near and dear to my heart. I will say as a caveat, I could talk all day long on appendicitis alone, but I'm going to keep it really short and brief and hopefully address some of the controversies that you may be dealing with out in the community when you see these patients. I don't have any disclosures. So appendicitis, as we all know, is the most common surgical cause of abdominal pain in children. Younger ages are usually associated with perforation. For the most part, the diagnosis is really made with physical exam and ultrasound at this point. Lots of patients get CT scans, but if you look at a lot of the pediatric centers and even adult centers, you really can effectively diagnose this with ultrasound now and save the radiation for the children. Most of these procedures are performed laparoscopically, and there's a few papers showing the safety of single-site surgery. If that's something in your wheelhouse, it certainly is safe to do in children. There's been a recent increase in the non-operative management of acute appendicitis. I'm going to talk about acute appendicitis and perforated appendicitis separately and just go with operative versus non-operative management. So the non-operative management has certainly increased over the past few years. And there are a few retrospective studies and a couple prospective studies. And this is just one that was really well done out of Nationwide by Kate Neans and Pete Manici. This study was a patient choice trial, so it's kind of an interesting study because the parents were presented with both options, and the parents and the child got to decide what they were going to do. It enrolled patients that were age 7 to 17. Everyone needed to have acute appendicitis, and to help ensure that, they only enrolled patients with less than 48 hours of symptoms, white counts that were less than 18,000, and no evidence of fecal lith or rupture on their imaging. The primary outcome for the study was successful non-operative management at 1 year, i.e., no one came back and needed their appendix taken out. This was done over a six-month period. There were 136 eligible patients, and 102 were enrolled. 37 chose the non-operative management, which just included IV antibiotics for at least 24 hours and then a transition to oral antibiotics after that. And then 65 chose urgent appendectomy. Interestingly, the negative appendectomy rate for the operative group was 6%, which is really higher than most of the current studies when you look overall at negative appendectomy rates. The success rate of their non-operative arm was 95% at discharge, which is awesome, 89% at 30 days, which also still sounds really good, and then 76% at 1 year. Also still sounds really good, right? But a few caveats. The non-operative management group had a longer length of stay, but when they looked at quality of life scores, it was actually equivalent between the two groups. So when you see their trial, this looks good, and this probably is why what happened in the next study happened. So another group just tried to look at the non-operative management of acute appendicitis and see where it's been and where it's going, and then also look at hospital resource utilization and cost. So this was a FIS study that looked at appendicitis in 45 U.S. pediatric hospitals. It's a seven-year period. Again, they looked at trends, like how many patients were getting non-operative management and hospital resource utilization, and then the cost of both treatment options. This included 99,000 children with appendicitis, which of course is a huge cohort of patients. 66% had acute appendicitis, which is about what we normally think of. About 30% of patients will present with perforated, and only 6% were managed non-operatively. But that was 4,190 patients, which is a lot considering, to me, I still feel like non-operative management is a new thing. If you look over on the chart on the right, it just shows the percent of non-operative management based on year. And so you can see that it was really not being used very often in 2010-11. But when we get to 2016, in the FIS database, 25% of patients were being treated with non-operative management or antibiotics alone for acute appendicitis. One thing that this study showed was that the non-operative management patients had more advanced imaging, so they were more likely to have ultrasound and CT. They had more ED visits, and then they had longer hospitalization. So when we think about hospital resource utilization, non-operative management really increased that. 46% of these patients had subsequent appendectomy. So when we looked at our other study, it was a 76% success rate. This is much, much less. And when they looked at median time to appendectomy, just in the subset of patients that had admitted to the hospital, that was actually 52 days later. So if you were treated what we consider to be successful non-operative management, you actually still had your appendix out on average 2 months later. And these are going to be patients that came back in with abdominal pain or recurrent appendicitis and then got an appendectomy at that time. They looked at some predictors of getting a subsequent appendectomy, and those were younger age, CT use, and increased IV days. All increased your risk. Something that was interesting about this study, and I think is really important to note, is it's a database study. And so I really wondered how they picked patients that had non-operative management. And they really looked at if you had a diagnosis of appendicitis and you didn't get an appendectomy, then you were considered to be non-operative management. So some of these patients actually were only seen in the ER, got antibiotics, a diagnosis of appendicitis somehow, and then were sent home. So I do think that this is a mixed bag of patients, and I don't think that it is as representative as the prospective trial that was done at Nationwide. So just a little caveat when you look at the results of the non-operative management. Now I'm just going to briefly talk about perforated appendicitis. So the traditional thought on perforated appendicitis, which started about in the 1980s, was initial supportive therapy, so IV antibiotics, IV fluid resuscitation, maybe drainage of an abscess with interventional radiology, and then a delayed appendectomy. A delayed appendectomy was usually performed just to confirm your diagnosis and decrease the risk of recurrent appendicitis. In 2000, the American Pediatric Surgical Association membership was surveyed and actually showed huge variation in how people were treating perforated appendicitis and even which surgeons were doing interval appendectomies. And so there was a few retrospective studies that really supported the safety of maybe operating on these patients earlier rather than later. Since that time, there are actually two randomized controlled trials examining early appendectomy versus delayed appendectomy for perforated appendicitis. There was initially a study out of Kansas City and then later a study out of Le Bonheur at my institution. And what both of these studies show was that early appendectomy for perforated appendicitis actually improved outcomes. So you had an earlier return to normal activity, less adverse events, decreased hospital length of stay, even when you added in their second hospitalization for interval appendectomy in the delayed arm, decreased hospital stays. We had improved quality of life both for the patient and the parents, and decreased parenteral stress. So based on these two studies, I would recommend for perforated appendicitis that you do an early appendectomy if at all possible. I always give patients the caveat, both of these studies excluded patients with what we consider to be appendiceal mass. So if this is the patient with perforation who comes in 2 weeks after their perforation and they're really better, they're eating, they may be having a fever, they've got a palpable abdominal mass, meaning they've got a very walled off, very, very old abscess, those patients were excluded from both of these studies. And the thought process on that was that there were enough data to support that those patients really should be managed with a delayed appendectomy. So initially with IV antibiotics, IR drainage, or open drainage of their abscess, and then an appendectomy later on. So just a caveat to that statement. All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about Meckel's diverticulitis. So Meckel's diverticulum is a remnant of the omphalomesenteric or vitellin duct, and it's on the anti-mesenteric border of the small intestine. I don't think I have a pointer, but you can see it in that picture there. The presentation usually is painless rectal bleeding, but can also present as abdominal pain if it's inflamed, kind of like a patient with appendicitis, an obstruction, or even umbilical drainage. That picture is one of my fellow chiefs. He had Meckel's diverticulitis when we were chief residents, and he got his Meckel's taken off by one of our attendings. So I asked him for permission, but I always talk about whenever I talk about Meckel's diverticulitis because of that. Remember the rule of two, so it's 2% of the population, it's 2 feet from the ileocecal valve, it's usually around 2 years of age, and it's 2 times more likely in males. So, as I said, the age is generally boys less than 5 years of age is going to be your typical presentation of a Meckel's. The diagnosis can be made with ultrasound, very similar to appendicitis. Sometimes they think it's appendicitis, but actually it's a Meckel's when you get in there to operate on them. Or in a patient that presents with painless rectal bleeding, a Meckel scan, which uses technetium, can be very helpful in identifying the Meckel's diverticulum. The treatment really is a diverticulectomy or a small bowel resection, and that really depends on how large the Meckel's is, where the inflammation is, and where you have ectopic tissue. The small bowel resection is generally reserved for patients that have inflammation at the base or you have a very wide-based Meckel's. I want to talk just a little bit about some controversies in Meckel diverticulum. So this study was done in 2011, really to look at the surgical approach. It was done by Kim Rusher, who's one of my fellows, so a dear friend, using the FIS database again. She found 850 patients with Meckel's diverticulum. 60 of these patients had operations for symptoms, and 40% had operations for incidental Meckel's. The most common presentations, as we discussed, were 30% obstruction, 27% bleeding, and 19% with intussusception, otherwise presenting with obstruction as well. You can see over on the right, the age distribution of Meckel's diverticulum. So most patients are going to present with less than 1 year of age, but really the largest proportion are less than four. 25% of these cases were performed laparoscopically, and when you compare the laparoscopic versus the open surgeries, the laparoscopic patients had a shorter hospital length of stay, which was about 1.5 days shorter. So based on this, we really can approach this laparoscopically. It's very similar to an appendectomy, so if you've gotten really good at doing appendectomies laparoscopically, the Meckel's is very similar as well. Next, I'm going to touch briefly on incidental diverticulectomy. I remember this always came up when I was a surgery resident. Do we take it out? Do we not take it out? What do we do? So this is a study out of Annals of Surgery from 1994. And it was 145 patients. It was a population-based study, so they were really trying to determine, like, in the population, if we do or don't take them out, what happens. They had 87 patients that had an incidental diverticulectomy, and these patients had a 2% early complication rate and a 2% delayed complication rate, so relatively low. So they're thinking, oh, yeah, you should take these out. When they looked at the 58 patients that had the mixed size for symptoms, however, they had a much higher early complication rate, so 12%, and then a 7% delayed complication rate. So when you look at this study, they said, you know what, we should always take these out when they're incidental because it's so low risk, and if we wait for symptoms to happen, then they're going to have a higher risk of early and delayed complications. So they definitely recommended, no matter what the age, you should take it out. Since that time, another study had been done by some pediatric surgeons in the UK, which was really a systematic review. They looked at all the literature. This is in 2008, so there's been some recent studies, but this was really one of the better done. And they found 37 articles that reported on the on incidental Meckel's diverticulectomy. This was almost 3,000 patients, with only 132 having early postoperative complications, so 4%. And 5.3% of complications were in the resection group, and 1% of complications were in the in situ group. So if you looked at 2,000 of them had their Meckel's taken out, but 671 had them left in, it was actually a lower early complication and a lower delayed complication in the patients that had the Meckel's left in sight. So this paper really recommended there's no need to resect. It doesn't matter what age they are, there's no need to resect. But honestly, I looked all through the literature. There's really not good data to say yes or no. So I think that when you find that Meckel's, when you're operating for something else, you just have to sort of make a good clinical decision. Certainly, the younger the patient is, the more likely that they're going to have symptoms from it at some point. But if they haven't had symptoms by age four, they're likely never to have symptoms again. So you really do have to wonder and question if you need to take that out incidentally, that incidental Meckel's out. All right, now I'm going to go to intussusception. I think I'm doing okay on my time. I'll talk really fast for this one. Intussusception is prolapse of one part of the intestine into the adjacent segment. It usually presents with crampy abdominal pain, bloody stool, vomiting, palpable abdominal mass. Intussusception is really common in ages 3 months to 3 years, and half of the patients are going to present in less than 1 year of age. So when you have an infant come in with crampy abdominal pain, obstruction, bloody stool, you really want to think about intussusception. The diagnosis can be made with an abdominal x-ray, as you see over here on the right, or an air or barium contrast enema, which takes a little bit more time. Most commonly, we're diagnosing that with ultrasound now as well. So there's a theme for my talk, ultrasound, ultrasound, ultrasound for the child with abdominal pain. Treatment is a hydrostatic or pneumatic enema reduction. You can reduce them operatively if your enema reduction fails, or if you feel the patient has a bowel perforation or peritonitis or isn't going to withstand the enema, then you certainly should take them to the operating room. This usually does not require resection unless there's a lead point that you can feel or see. And I always put this up, remember to push, not pull. If you pull, sometimes the baby bowel is very delicate, and you can actually rip it in two pieces, which is not good. So you really want to push the intestinal septum out. The recurrence rate is up to 15%, and you can have recurrence even if you operatively reduce them. So I'm just going to talk about three controversies with intussusception. One is antibiotic usage. So some centers routinely give antibiotics prior to enema reduction, but there are a couple studies up here. One is out of China, and the other one Promote is on, actually, is out of Canada. And both of these studies looked at patients at two different centers, patients that gave antibiotics and centers that did not give antibiotics. And the long story short, there was no difference. So we probably don't need to give antibiotics based on the literature that I could find. Though, when you look at textbooks, some of them still recommend to give antibiotics prior to enema reduction, and that was really to decrease translocation of gram-negative organisms. But when you look at the actual outcomes, it doesn't appear that patients have complications with that. The next controversy is just, do they need to be admitted or not? So one of the old things that I was always taught is you're going to give those antibiotics before you get them reduced, and then you're going to admit them and watch them because you want to make sure they don't recur and they don't have any problems after this. But there are actually a good number of studies. One, the top one is a study out of the emergency room, and then the second one is a study out of Canada. Both of these looked at actually not admitting the patients after enema, but just keeping them in the emergency room for about a 2 to 6 hour observation. And both of these studies actually showed it to be very safe. The recurrence rate is about 10 to 15%, but a lot of those recurrences actually happen after 24 hours, so you're not even capturing those if you keep them admitted for the 24 hours anyway. So both of these studies show there are no adverse events, and outcomes don't differ if you keep them or they just stay in the emergency room. So it's probably safe to just observe them in the emergency room for a few hours after enema reduction. Now, this is only in simple intussusception, so it's not in any patient that you're concerned about bowel perforation or necrosis or ischemia. And then last is just laparoscopic versus open intussusception reduction. So this was a systematic review. It included 10 retrospective studies that had 276 laparoscopic cases. 70% of these were successful laparoscopically without open conversion. They had a 3% postoperative complication rate. They did have one recurrence after laparoscopy, but the patients that got laparoscopic reduction had a much shorter hospital length of stay than those that got an open reduction. So if you have a patient that presents with intussusception and it cannot be reduced with enema, a laparoscopic attempt is always a good start. And if you can't get it done laparoscopically, then open it and do it the open way. So summary, appendicitis, the non-operative management with antibiotics is okay, but there's about a 25 to 46% failure rate and you're gonna have increased readmissions. Early appendectomy for perforated appendicitis really does improve outcomes. For Meckel's diverticulum, laparoscopic excision for treatment and the removal of an incidental Meckel's is still very controversial. For intussusception, most of these patients are going to be treated with enema reduction. Air is actually better than water in most of the studies. There's really no need for antibiotics or admission in simple cases, and laparoscopic reduction will decrease your length of stay. Thank you.